Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. I'm John Hansen from the aforementioned website, FantasyGuru.com. It is Thursday, August 27th, and we're fired up for the big dress rehearsal, week three of the preseason, and we're going to break it all down in a moment with our guy, Greg Cosell. We want to remind you, of course, if you're not a subscriber to FantasyGuru.com, definitely check out the website. You can see what you get. And I think people need to check it out if they're even remotely interested, because it's unbelievable the amount of content we have up on the site and all the offerings. FantasyGuru.com. Check that out. We'll welcome in our guy Greg Cosell right now. Greg, good morning. How are you?
John, how's it going?
Going pretty well. Going pretty well. I had trouble playing the intro file. I don't know why. Let's see if that works here. I guess not. Never mind. No introduction, Greg. You don't need an introduction. You don't need fancy production and all that. You're locked into the film room. So how much tape have you watched from week two of the preseason?
Probably most of it. You know, I've missed some just because I didn't get a chance to get to it. But, you know, it's preseason so hard because players teams mix and match players. They don't necessarily play who they're starting. There's scaled down game plans. There's, so it's very hard to make definitive judgments about preseason games.
Yeah, I like individually looking at the players. You can.
Yeah, that's really the best way to go. You know, it's hard to talk about schemes. It's hard to talk about, you know, whether a team will be, you know, good. This unit will be good or bad, because it may not be the players that will play once we hit week one within that given unit.
Have you noticed, though, some defenses, maybe it's me, seem to be blitzing a little bit more. Some teams are seemingly taking a little more serious than others, but we can move on.
Well, you know
on,
what
Greg.
I think's happened?
Go ahead.
You know what I think's happened, John? Is I think the league as a whole, there's more blitzing. So I think what teams are doing is practicing what they do. So it looks like there's more blitzing because teams have to practice what they're going to do once the regular season starts. So I wouldn't necessarily say, I mean, by the numbers, it might seem like there's more blitzing in the preseason, but I think teams practice what they do. And so therefore you see it.
We'll start now, Greg, in the NFC, and we'll talk Philadelphia Eagles, and didn't see a ton of Sam Bradford, saw the one drive. Someone told me that they were thinking about keeping him out there for a little bit longer, but he took a couple of hits, and they were like, you know what, that's good. He took some hits. Let's get him the hell out of there. He was a little off, Greg, as you know, sailed on a couple of throws, but your overall impressions with the first team Eagle offense? Obviously, the running attack was effective with DeMarco Murray, who looked good, and Ryan Matthews, who looked great on his touchdown run. Not a huge sample size, but any thoughts on Philly's first team offense?
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, one of the throws he was hot on, Aguilar was late off the line. So when Sam was ready to throw, Aguilar wasn't where he should be. That was actually one where he got drilled, Bradford, that is. So, I mean, it was fine. Again, the sample size is so small. He converted, I remember a third down he converted, which was well done, where he read an underneath defender and made a good throw. But you know, I would imagine, John, I don't know your feeling about this, but what did he play, like 12 snaps, 13 snaps? Wouldn't you think to get ready for week one that he would have to play sort of meaningful snaps this week? I don't think you can put him out there week one just playing 20 snaps in the preseason.
Not only that, Greg, I would say get him out there in the fourth game for a drive, because you're right, it's been really low, the number of snaps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they'll do that, but I would think that this week, and I know they play Green Bay, and who knows what Green Bay is going to do or not going to do, but I would just think he needs some reps at this point. That, you know, you don't want to just start off week one. Hey, that's my opinion. Chip Kelly, I'm sure they have it all mapped out to the exact number of snaps they feel are appropriate. But it just seems to me he's got to be out there.
Yeah, well, like I said, someone told me that they were maybe happy and scared when he took a couple of hits. They were happy that he took them and survived,
right.
But also it's like, whoa, okay, let's get him the hell out of there. You mentioned Nelson Aguilar, and he's certainly a player that I like, but it's not like we can expect the world. Any thoughts on Aguilar early on in the season? If Chip Kelly maybe has an MO with young receivers like this, it's ease him in, like he did last year with Jordan Matthews. And Aguilar is obviously, Greg, still learning on the job. Do you think this kid might be a little slow off the mark in terms of putting up numbers?
You know what? I don't know. He's going to get snaps. This offense runs a lot of plays. They put up yards. So I think he's going to catch balls. I mean, you know, again, as we always say, what I always say regarding fantasy, that's hard to know. But he's going to catch balls, John. This team puts up a lot of yards. They put up a lot of numbers offensively, and he'll do that. I mean, it'll be like Jordan Matthews. I mean, you know, Jordan Matthews, I think if he played in a quote-unquote more traditional offense where everybody huddled and they did all that, I'm not sure he would have had the numbers he had last year. But I think it'll be the same for Nelson Aguilar.
Well, Matthews clearly looks like a go-to guy big time, like a legit number one option in the passing attack. We'll see about Zach Ertz. Josh Huff, I thought, flashed a little bit this summer. What type of player is Josh Huff for those who are unfamiliar? I know he can play inside, he can play outside. He's a pretty athletic kid. He's someone to watch in Philly.
Yeah, he's a quickness player. Really good lateral quickness, short area burst. I think he fits this offense really, really well because this is not really a vertical pass game. It's a sustaining offense that wears you down. So I would expect, you know, we may have talked about this before, but I think as the season progresses, you'll see Aguilar, Matthews, and Huff be their top three.
Let's move on to the Cowboys, Greg, and it's in kind of an underwhelming preseason thus far. They held a bunch of linemen out last week, didn't play a lot of the first-team guys like Romo for fear of injury, and there were some field condition issues there. But the closer we get to week one, Greg, the more it looks like Tony Romo is going to be exposed a lot more than he was last year. Obviously, they're not going to have that running attack with DeMarco Murray, and that's certainly a huge element here. Not only that, they lose Orlando Scandrick, Greg. So talk about their defense. Let's start there because they lose their best corner. Brandon Carr is up and down.
Yeah.
Byron Jones is a rookie. They may have a pass rush here, Greg, that can kind of help out the secondary, but I'm looking at the roster, and I'm like, one more key injury. Like, if Sean Lee goes down again or someone like that, they're in trouble. And, of course, Hardy is not going to be there early on in the season. Do you think this defense is going to be better or worse, Greg? I think personnel-wise they should be better, but no Scandrick is huge. And now Murray and no sustaining running attack is going to put these guys on the field a lot more.
They've got some concerns, John, because, you know, a lot of people think Rod Marinelli and they think cover two, Tampa two. But they played a lot of man last season as the year progressed. And Scandrick's their best cover corner. He plays both outside and inside. He's now gone. So now they have concerns in their secondary. The concern for a coach is, does it limit my options? And if it limits your options, you become more predictable. So I think defense and pass coverage is a wait-and-see proposition right now.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to play offense like they did last year. I mean, more of it's going to have to be put on Tony Romo's plate. So pass protection and all that is absolutely massive. Let's move on, and we're going to talk about the Giants. Not a ton going on here in Big Blue, and they continue to have a rough go of the preseason. Can we take anything out of that? We know what happened last year. We all kind of laughed at him last year, and it kind of worked out. Do you just kind of, I don't say blow off, but is this kind of irrelevant information, what we're seeing from the Giants in the preseason thus far?
Now, I don't put a lot of stock into it, to be honest with you, John, and that doesn't make me right, but you know, I look back to the last six games of last season when Manning was great and the pass game really kicked in. So, you know, you're dealing with a veteran quarterback. You know, the concern would be the O-line, which obviously is another wait-and-see proposition. But I wouldn't have real concerns about Eli Manning. I think he'll be fine within this offense, and that's why preseason is so hard. I mean, and you know it too. I mean, we have these conversations every week, but I don't think you're looking at it as, oh my God, Eli Manning's going to have a terrible season, right?
No, not at all. And we'll see what happens in this backfield. Looks like all three guys are going to be involved. And Andre Williams,
yep.
I don't think he's a better runner than Rashad Jennings. When you compare them, who right now is the better runner, Rashad Jennings or Andre Williams? Williams may have a little bit more shot out of a cannon qualities in terms of a little bit of explosiveness, but I still lean to Jennings being the better runner than Williams.
Well, Jennings probably gives you a few more dimensions as a runner. I think
yeah.
Andre Williams is your downhill, urgent power runner. And I think there's a role for that in this offense. But I think Jennings gives you a little more as a runner, and he certainly gives you more as a pass receiver. Although, I think that the big question for this team is how they're going to use Vereen, because I think Vereen is a guy that can really present some matchup problems, not only for him but for others as well, based on alignment. And again, I don't think the Giants are going to show a lot of that in the preseason.
I think we're going to see Vereen field with Jennings or Williams.
I agree.
And I think Vereen,
I agree.
Yeah, and I think because of what you just said, it gives them a lot more options in terms of running plays and designing plays. And also, I think that all three guys, again, are going to play. I'm going to give Vereen like 100 carries. And I think that Jennings and Williams will split up about 325 carries. Let's move on to Washington. And obviously, not to kick a man when he's down, but it's getting worse and worse with RG3. But just your thoughts in this realm. You know, Jay Gruden is basically trying to force RG3 into his system. We see this, wants him to be a pocket passer. Do you think, though, that Jay... And we're back here. Something happened. We had a little technical problem, but bear with us. Not sure we're going to have time to edit this time of the year, but we'll do the best we can. Greg, are you there?
John, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me, sir?
I can. That's a good sign.
That's good. Woo, that's a good sign. Okay. All right. Where the hell were we? We're talking
about... RG3.
Right. Don't you think they could incorporate some elements that really work with RG3? It seems as if Jay Gruden is, I'm not saying he's got a vendetta here, but I think maybe he can adjust his thinking a little bit if he wants to have RG3 as a starter. Otherwise, why don't you just go with Colt McCoy?
Well, this is a fascinating philosophical discussion, probably too long for now, but it comes down to what you ultimately believe produces quality, consistent quarterback play in the NFL. If you believe, as I think a large majority do, John, that eventually you're going to have to play the position from the pocket, then
yeah.
You have to teach a guy how to do that. Now, that doesn't mean you never have designed boots. That doesn't mean you never get a quarterback out of the pocket. That doesn't mean that. But at the end of the day, your quarterback has to be able to play effectively and consistently from the pocket. I know there's been a lot written about Jay Gruden, and I know a lot of people have this attitude that, you know, he has a vendetta or he's doing the wrong thing. But the bottom line is, in the NFL, your quarterback's going to have to make throws from the pocket, and he's trying to teach him how to do that. Now, we're not there every day. So we don't know if RG3 may not be receptive to it. I don't know any of this stuff. What I do know is that if you can't throw it from the pocket in the NFL with consistency and the 20 things that go with that, then you're not going to be a consistent player. And it's really as simple as that. It's like a mathematical equation.
Yeah, and the O-line, they're adjusting under Bill Callahan. The protection was terrible. So it's kind of the perfect storm.
great point. Last week, I mean, no matter what you feel about RG3, you watch that game, and I watched the tape last week, and he had no chance, zero chance. So,
yeah.
You know, and again, then you get this argument about, well, don't put him out there. Well, I don't know. So in other words, you're not going to play him at all until week one? I don't know. You know, you have to take these questions beyond the simple gut cliches. So you're not going to play RG3 once in the preseason, and then all of a sudden you're going to put him out there week one?
Yeah, it's ugly, Greg. I think there's blame to go around everywhere here. That line was really bad. Jay Gruden, I think, could make, and look, I'm an unqualified opinion here, but I think he could do some things to kind of work with RG3 a little bit more than he is. RG3 is not seeing the field. He's not processing information. He's taking off and running. It's horrible. It is so bad there with RG3. So we'll move on and let's talk Chicago Bears. A lot of injuries here. Wide receiver Eddie Royal. Banged up now.
Yeah.
You've got Jeffrey hurt. It's pretty darn bad. So Johnny Fox, we all know what he wants to do, run the football. Any thoughts on Jeremy Langford? Because they seem interested in working in another back at some point. And look, Matt Forte's 30. I mean, we love him and all that. But Jacquizz Rodgers is a jag. I mean, this guy, you don't talk about just a guy. I mean, he tries hard, but he's not big. He's not fast. He's not elusive. He's really... but Jeremy Langford, Greg, granted, I don't know if you saw it this past weekend, against backups likely, but I like what I saw. I thought he ran with some power. He's not a small man and showcased the speed. I like Jeremy Langford factoring into this backfield.
And I think since they drafted him in the fourth round, you know, they would like him more than Kadeem Carey, who they did not draft a year ago, but is still there. You know, Langford to me... was a guy with pretty good feet, some explosiveness. He runs hard. He's not built like a big back, so I always questioned whether he could run with power in the NFL because he was a very good inside runner in college, but I didn't view him as naturally powerful. But I think his style of running fits what John Fox wants to do.
And I think that he could be a factor here in this backfield, not really on the radar just yet for fantasy. Moving on to Detroit, not a ton going on here. We all love Amir Abdullah. Any thoughts on the Lion offense that you've seen?
Yeah, I do. I watched the tape, and I thought that one thing that stood out to me was Eric Ebron was detached from the formation quite a bit. So that's clearly something now they're moving toward. So, again, I'm not suggesting he's going to be Jimmy Graham with Joe Lombardi as the OC who used to be in New Orleans. But it was clear on tape that that's something they're working on, getting Eric Ebron to be kind of a movable chess piece who lines up all over. And I think that's something to watch for.
Yeah, certainly. And Greg, you could argue it's a really good situation for him. You're playing with Stafford, who's a high-end talent, arm talent at the quarterback position. You've got Calvin. You've got Golden Tate. He's got to dominate the middle of the field. I mean, it should all be there for him to make plays, Greg.
I mean, look, you know, Stafford, we've talked about numerous times. You know, he can make every throw. You know, I think that they have weapons. I mean, you know, Golden Tate, you know, there are a lot of people, including myself, who probably felt that he was a number three type receiver early in his career. Maybe it was just being a part of a pass game that really was not that multidimensional. And now he's with a pass game that's a lot more multidimensional.
Let's move on to Green Bay and let's discuss the loss of Jordy Nelson. We know it's massive. It was really a two wide receiver offense, really a two receiver offense last year with Nelson and Cobb. How huge is this? Let's start for Eddie Lacy. You would think on one hand they'll rely on him a little bit more, but is it going to be tougher for Eddie Lacy? We saw some struggles running early last year. Wasn't exactly running with great vision and patience. Is it going to be tougher for Eddie Lacy with no Jordy Nelson? He's the best, arguably, Greg, deep threat in the league.
It'll be interesting. I mean, clearly this, and they have a lot of injuries now, so the preseason's almost not relevant right now, but so we don't know what they're going to do when the season starts. Obviously, they have Aaron Rodgers, in most people's minds, the best quarterback in the league. So do they still play that way, knowing that their number one vertical receiver is no longer there? Or, given the fact that they have a real nice two-headed backfield in Eddie Lacy and James Starks, does this team try to run the ball a little more? And I don't think we're going to know that till the season starts, John. But this team is capable of running the ball effectively. It's not. This is not just a passing team with no run element to it. You know, I think you're going to see formationally them being a little different because we used to see Jordy Nelson as the single receiver very often, and that single receiver often has to beat man coverage. So I don't, you know, if it's Jeff Janis, we don't know. We don't know how it's going to play out. But they are a multidimensional offense that can run the ball.
Your thoughts on Davante Adams really picking up a lot of the slack here? Look, he's not an explosive athlete. 11.7 yards a catch, so he's not.
Well, Jordan. He's not explosive. He was a rookie last year. He's not explosive in a strict sense, but he's not a slow plodding possession guy either. He's a little more than that. You know, he was a rookie last year. Probably had two or three real good games, and the rest, you know, not so much. But he was a second-round pick, and I liked him coming out of Fresno, and I know a lot of people did. So now it's time. The catches have to go somewhere. You know, they're not going to turn into the Dallas Cowboys where Aaron Rodgers throws the ball 430 times. They're not going to do that. So there's still going to be balls thrown.
Do you have any thoughts on Ty Montgomery? Because he was seeing some reps with the first-team offense at Stanford. He's kind of maybe a bigger version of Cobb. He can get it downfield. I saw a screenshot from this past weekend. He was running right down the middle, wide open. Scott told him he didn't pull the trigger. Do you like him?
He's a big, physical, straight line, explosive athlete. He's not a lateral guy. You know, he doesn't have loose hips getting in and out of breaks, but he's really good run after catch because he's strong. He's powerful. He's a straight line, explosive athlete. And again, I believe he was a third-round pick. He's going to get some opportunities here. I mean, he's a guy I thought had a chance when he came out of Stanford. He was an intriguing prospect to me.
And I know you like Jeff Janis out of Saginaw Valley.
I do.
6'3", but he seems to be still a little raw. You would think that he would slide in there, but it looks like Montgomery for now, and Janis did replace Jordy, but Montgomery been working with the first team. What do you like about Janis?
Well, I think that he's a guy who's a little more vertically explosive than you think. He's got some deceptive speed in some ways, and of course he played at a small school, but in some ways when you watched him, you thought, hey, is there a chance this guy could, you know, has Jordy Nelson traits down the road? You know, for a lot of people, because of the small school, when he runs by those corners, you know, it's hard to get a read because he's not playing against, you know, high-level major college football players. But I think traits-wise, you could say, hey, he's got similar traits. Can those be developed, and can he do it at the NFL level?
In Minnesota, I'm already waving the white flag on the Mike Wallace and Charles Johnson argument. I was told by someone about 2 months ago who covers the team that Wallace was going to be the top wideout in terms of getting the targets and in terms of, you know, the pecking order in the offense, if you will. And someone also told me that they talked to Wallace, and Wallace told them this week that they're not showing what they're going to really be doing offensively. But it's clear he's still a work in progress, dropping passes, a little sloppy. And meanwhile, Charles Johnson just – and look, I never was down on Johnson. I liked him too. he's the guy, Greg. I mean, it's obvious that in terms of the chemistry, in terms of the timing with Teddy Bridgewater – It's pretty impressive that this time last year, Charles Johnson was sitting here on the Browns, and now we're talking about – it feels like he's been on the Vikings for like 2-3 years. I mean, this guy is a really nice receiver, Charles Johnson.
We've talked about him numerous times, and I told you how much I liked him, and he's going to catch more balls than Mike Wallace, John. I mean, I think, you know, we all agree with that now.
Oh, no, I've always agreed with that. I always had. I just thought Wallace would make, you know, I'm enamored with the verticality of Mike Wallace, plus Peterson.
Right.
You know, that does intrigue me. But, yeah, I mean, I waved the white flag on that, and I moved. Actually, Friday I had him neck and neck, and then watching the game over the week, I'm like, oh, clearly, there's no way I can rank Mike Wallace over Charles Johnson. Let's move on here. In Carolina, Cam's having a tough go here, and how massive is the Kelvin Benjamin law? I guess we covered it last week, but Benjamin, to ask anyone like a Devin Funchess, spin and do what Benjamin did, but that's a tall order. Can Funchess be a downfield threat in this offense with Cam like Kelvin Benjamin was last year? Because that's very important to me.
I don't think he can, but you know, obviously Funchess was a guy, there were widely polarizing opinions about him coming out. So I don't believe he's that guy. Now, I watched Newton last week, and Newton actually threw the ball really well last week. Our guy, who Corey Brown, actually dropped two balls, including a touchdown.
Yeah.
So it was not a good performance by Corey Brown. But I don't think Funchess is that guy.
That would have been a tough play for Corey Brown, though, don't you think? Wasn't there a defender?
Well,
like,
if you
want
to be an NFL receiver, you got to make contested catches, John. I mean, you know, and he dropped another ball, too. That was a pretty routine catch. But, you know, for people who didn't watch, and I watched the tape, obviously, but if you didn't, if you just saw Cam's numbers and the interception he threw, I don't believe was on him. But I actually thought he threw the ball really well last week.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I didn't pick up on that, quite frankly. Anything else here? Now we can move on to New Orleans. Have you warmed up at all to Brandon Cooks stepping into the number one role here? I mean, he's lighting it up in the preseason.
Yeah,
but
I watched their offense. To me, the more fascinating thing was their usage of Brandon Coleman. We know what Cooks. We know what Cooks is. He's not going to be a surprise, I don't think, right, John?
No, but he was a player that you didn't seem to be really, really high on. I just wondered if you liked – I mean, I know you liked him.
He's their most explosive offensive player right now. So, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any issues with Brandon Cooks. This team throws the ball a lot. He's going to catch a lot of balls. You know, whether – you know, the concern was last year he only averaged 10 or 11 yards per catch. So the question becomes, because he's an explosive vertical athlete, does that go up to 14 or 15? You would guess it probably would. But Brandon Coleman looked like a different guy to me than when I watched him at Rutgers a few years ago. He slimmed down. He looked a little different, you know, and they moved him around quite a bit. They designed a play for him in the red zone. It was a ball he should have caught. He dropped it, but the play was clearly designed to go to him. They got a matchup they wanted. So I think he's a guy to watch.
How about Drew Brees? He looked really good. He said, like, he's feeling healthier now. He wasn't 100% last year. I think that Drew Brees is someone who's still going to put up real big numbers. A lot of people are down on him a little bit. Anything from Brees this past weekend?
Well, he looked great. I mean, he's not a concern. I mean, even last year when, you know, a lot of us, including myself, didn't think he necessarily had his best year, and maybe you're starting to think he's slightly on the way down, he still puts up numbers because it's an offense that throws the ball. I'll tell you one other thing that stood out to me, and I'm not suggesting this guy's going to catch 70 balls. Did you happen to see they hit Mark Ingram on a wheel route out of the backfield? Now, ideally, I assume they want C.J. Spiller to be that guy, but, you know, C.J. Spiller seems to be hurt all the time. So we don't know where he stands right now. But that immediately stood out to me watching the tape. That was a play designed for Mark Ingram.
Yeah, Mark Ingram is fairly comfortable catching the football. I mean, I can name a number of really good running backs who are not as comfortable catching the ball, like Adrian Peterson, for example. Yeah, Mark Ingram could catch 40 balls, 40-plus. Here for New Orleans. Let's see, anything else here? Let's move on to Tampa. And Doug Martin, I don't know if he can keep this up, Greg, but pretty impressive.
He looked good
on Monday night.
Very quick.
Really good.
Very quick.
Yeah.
Lost weight.
By the way.
Looked quick.
Yeah. By the way, I thought Charles Sims also looked a lot quicker than last year. I mean, he was clearly not healthy last year, Greg.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's big for them because they're going to have to run the ball. And I thought Jameis played well this week. Looked good. You know, he can throw it. I mean, that's, you know, with him, it's going to be decisions and his understanding of coverage. And this week, I thought he did a good job. Didn't face a lot of difficult coverage concepts, but all you can do is deal with the evidence at hand.
I sense that Jameis, look, the O-line is still a big issue there in Tampa, but I sense he's going to make mistakes. It's going to be sloppy at times, but he's also going to make plays. And that throw to Shepard was a hose. I mean, he has got a...
Oh,
rocket.
Yeah. The seam throw. That was covered, too. It was a great throw. Just a quick comment in response to your O-line. I think their O-line is going to be a weekly matchup deal because, you know, Donovan Smith will start at left tackle. He's a rookie. The week before against Everson Griffin, who was clearly a better than average NFL pass rusher. He struggled. This week he played against Michael Johnson, who's, you know, not a great pass rusher, and he actually looked very good. He looked much better. But I think he's going to be a week-to-week matchup guy, and that will impact how the Bucs have to play. You know, if they're playing a really good pass rusher on that side, they're going to have to give Donovan Smith help. If they're not, they may be able to get away with not giving him help. But I think that'll be a week-to-week deal.
You've got these two big receivers on the outside. Mike Evans down with a hamstring, not doing all that.
They got to watch that carefully. They got to watch that carefully, John, because hamstrings, you know, if he comes back too soon and then he tears it, you know, he's done for 8 weeks. So they got to be real careful with that.
When he's healthy, though, it's pretty clear to me that Jameis is not going to really hold them back in the big picture.
No.
He's just going to throw it up to these guys and have them make plays.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I know what you're saying. At times they do that, but the fact is, to have 2 6-5 receivers with a quarterback that does turn it loose, that's a very good combination.
Exactly. NFC West, the Cardinals. Did you see the tape on David Johnson? I was pretty impressed. I know Arians was a little upset popping runs to the outside, but he got better as the game progressed. And the guy's got – he's a big dude with power, and he can move.
It's going to be interesting how that all plays out because, you know, Andre Ellington is really good as a receiver out of the backfield. You know, who knows about Chris Johnson? I don't think we know how that's going to play out, John. I mean, I don't have a sense of that. I mean, when they go third down, is David Johnson even going to be on the field? Or is that Andre Ellington? I think it's going to be Andre Ellington.
Yeah, certainly. Ellington's still the main guy, but I think they were looking for someone to be able to work in there and not rely so much on Ellington. And Johnson is a guy who can catch passes out of the backfield, he can line up, even on the outside at times. So I think that they're looking for someone who's got a similar skill set and preferably someone
right.
who's bigger, and that is Johnson. So did you see anything from him running inside? Because his college tape wasn't all that great on that. Did you see any qualities that lead you to believe, David Johnson.
You're talking about Johnson?
Yeah, the Cardinals are up, mid-season in the fourth quarter, and they're looking to kind of run it to end the game. Do you see David Johnson as the finisher type of guy?
No, I don't. And again, I would rather go by how he ran when I watched, you know, 4 or 5 games in college than watching 8 carries up to this point in the NFL. So at this point, I would not see him as that player. It doesn't mean he can't get there, but right now, to me, he's not that guy.
I don't think Chris Johnson is that guy either, as we
No. They may not have that guy. I mean, they may try to groom Johnson for that role because he is 220 pounds.
Yeah. Are you seeing anything at all from John Brown? I know it's not a ton here in the preseason.
Yeah, he's
but
fast.
last year he was really seemingly a deep threat is basically what he was. Do you see
He was better than that. That's why I think he's got a chance, okay. John, because he caught a number of balls in the middle of the field last year on third down. So I think he has a chance despite his size. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's Antonio Brown, but I think he has similar physical trait. Now, whether he becomes Antonio Brown, who's clearly, I mean, other than the big receivers, Antonio Brown is the best receiver in football. So I'm not sitting here telling you John Brown is going to be the best receiver in football next week, but I think he has similar physical attributes.
Nick Foles and the Rams, not exactly lighting it up here. How critical is that O-line coming together and him having a running attack for Nick Foles? I'm worried about the offense in general. If the line, there's a lot of young guys. If it doesn't perform at a solid level and they're not exactly running the football and Todd Gurley back at practice is a good sign, but that's a bad situation there potentially for Nick Foles.
Well, you know what? They're a team, John, that's impossible to evaluate now because the way they're building their team, to be a four-quarter team, and no one plays 4 quarters in the preseason. You know, when you run the ball and your quarterback is a piece, that's a four-quarter game, and your defense is, you know, supposedly keeping everything together. So, you know, Nick Foles, to me, I mean, I think he's a little slow twitch in everything he does, but I think everybody knows that. So it's hard to judge how they're going to play, you know, when they get into four-quarter games because right now they're not playing that way. No one does in the preseason.
What the hell's going on in San Francisco? I guess maybe I'm overreacting, but I'm not seeing anything from the first team offense. So does Vernon Davis still exist, Greg? Did you spot him on tape?
Well, yeah, I mean, again, you know, it all depends on what they're trying to do. I thought Carlos Hyde looked very good this week. I thought he showed really light feet. He looks different, too. He must have lost some weight. So he looked really good. You know, I think that they're working in some O-line people to see how that plays out. Clearly, they haven't done a lot with the first-team offense as far as throwing the ball, so maybe this is the week they work on that. That's why it's so hard, John. I mean, I wouldn't know where to go with the Niners right now because Kaepernick's probably played, you know, 25 snaps in two games. So,
right.
How are we judging this? And I'm not knocking you. I'm just saying overall,
yeah.
I don't think there's anything we can say.
There isn't. The problem I have is we all know the offseason was so ugly. And just because of that and because of last year and Kaepernick's lack of development, I was like, can we see something here in the preseason? Anything? And I guess this is going to be a big test this coming week. If they don't show much this coming week, it's a complete unknown, and I got to lean
toward
the negative.
Well, you would assume. I mean, I'm hopeful that they play at least a half or more certainly with Kaepernick. I mean, you know, the third play of the game last week, they ran a read option play, okay? Now, to me, and again, this is just my personal opinion, who the hell am I? But I saw that play on the third play, and I'm like, why? Yeah, I'm like, why? That's a wasted play in the development of Kaepernick in the offense. You know he can do that. Why on the third play of the game are you running read option? You know, it's just a wasted play because you need to develop other things. We know he can run read option.
Exactly, and that's one play. It's a microcosm of, to me, the preseason thus far is, what are you doing out there? I mean, can you show us some signs of progress, of hope, throwing the football? And we're not going to get that with a read option play. Seattle, how concerned should we be about this whole line? It's as bad as it's ever been.
It's bad.
We know
it's bad.
Yeah.
I don't think Seattle is a team that shows much in the preseason, John, to be honest with you. I mean, their O-line is bad. But you know what? You could argue their O-line was bad last year, too, when they went to the Super Bowl. So now we're getting into degrees of badness. So,
right.
I mean, it was bad last year, you know, and they were able to overcome it and get to the Super Bowl. So that's a hard question to answer. But my sense watching Seattle through the first couple of weeks is they don't show anything, nothing at all.
Right. Okay.
I couldn't begin to tell you how I think they're going to use Jimmy Graham. I couldn't begin to tell you that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they looks like they're going to have him block a little bit more on the field a little bit more, so maybe he won't be pulled off like he was.
Well, that's because they're a running team, you know. So if he's going to be on the field with a team that's a running team, he's going to have to block some more.
Yeah, and he's going to be extended from the formation a ton too. I mean, he's going to be a glorified wide receiver.
Oh, for sure.
Here. With Russell Wilson. Tyler Lockett, I'm not sure we've talked about him, but he's doing well. He fits the type of receiver they like. He can get vertical. I think he'll make some plays. I think people are overrating him a little bit in the world of fantasy because these guys just don't put up numbers. But do you like Tyler Lockett? Do you like his tape?
Coming out of K-State, I kept going back and forth on him. There were times I really, really liked him, and other times I was uncertain. But I think on a team that needs receivers and needs some kind of quickness and burst, that he's going to get opportunities. And again, I don't think you're going to see a lot with him in the preseason. But he's going to get opportunities, and I think that he does provide some verticality, which, you know, I think Russell Wilson's actually a very good deep ball thrower. So I think it gives him a chance.
Yeah, no question. Here on the FantasyGuru.com podcast, we're moving over to the AFC East. Greg, Miami, Ryan Tannehill in the preseason does
efficient.
Appear to be in. Yeah, he appears to be in complete control here. It is only preseason. But they got Devontae Parker back practicing this week. And so you would think, barring a setback, he'd be on track to contribute. Maybe not week one, obviously, but what can he bring to Tannehill and this offense? And by the way, were you impressed with Tannehill's deep ball to Jordan Cameron this past weekend? That was a very good throw by Tannehill.
Oh, you're talking about when they shifted him outside the number? He ran. That was a design play. They got him matched up on the linebacker, Shaq Thompson. It was a great throw by Tannehill. You know, Devontae Parker, I'm anxious to see Devontae Parker because I was very up and down on him coming out. I didn't see him as a 14th pick in a draft, which, hey, like I said, doesn't make me right. I'm curious. I'm really curious. He's missed a lot of time. We'll see. You know, that's all I can say. I tell you, a guy you've talked about who the more I watch, the more I really like is Damian Williams.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is a really good receiver out of the backfield, Greg.
Man, he scored the touchdown. They got him matched up on Thomas Davis. You know, he's a all-pro linebacker, one of the best in the league in pass coverage. He ran a nice angle route out of the backfield. I think Damian Williams is a real interesting puzzle piece for this Dolphins offense. Now, from fantasy, who knows? I mean, he's not going to carry 200 times. He's probably not going to catch 80 balls. But I think that when they get into the red zone, I think he's going to be a factor.
I think we can count on him right now for at least 10 touches a game, Greg. There's room in his backfield for that. And
I agree with you, John.
Lamar Miller looked pretty damn good, too. He's put on some weight, but I don't think it's hurt his movement at all. Lamar Miller looked really good on that reception as well. So these two guys, that's a very interesting backfield, not even mentioning Jay Ajayi.
I agree. And you know, with the shotgun they use and, you know, the read option here and there, you know, it's an interesting offense. And I thought, by the way, Jarvis Landry looked really quick.
I'm telling you, Jarvis Landry is going to catch 90 balls. If he averages only 9.5 yards a catch, he may catch 100 balls this year. I'm really feeling it here with Ryan Tannehill. It's not like they've got a stud anywhere. It's just the holistic look at it with Tannehill in year four, second year in the offense, with some length in Parker, with a go-to guy in Landry, with an athlete at tight end in Cameron, with these running backs, they've got a lot to work with here. So I'm very optimistic. Let's talk about the Jets, because I have never been a huge Chris Ivory guy for fantasy thus far, Greg. And look, I haven't regretted that, but I'm feeling it a little bit this year. I don't think he's an inferior back. I think he's a pretty good player.
Oh, no
question. He's a violent runner. How about the notion, though, that Chris Ivory in a spread? I think that helps Chris Ivory playing with Chan Gailey. They're going to spread it out, and that's going to help create some rushing lanes for him, I think.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I don't know if they were just practicing that this week against the Falcons D, but they ran a boatload of empty sets when Fitzpatrick was in the game. And, you know, I don't know if that's something Chan is going to do, you know, because say what you want about Fitzpatrick. We know he's inconsistent in a lot of areas, but he's a smart guy. He understands protections. He understands how to get the ball out of his hand. I mean, he gets all that stuff. You know, in this game, he had a lot of quick throws on the edges, a lot of checkdowns. You know, they may think that that's a way they have to play offense, just to try to sustain some offense.
Yeah, but when Ivory's on the field, the defense will likely, as a general statement, be spread out a little bit more maybe than we're used to, don't you think? And he's also
If it's three wide,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they will do a lot of three wide, Greg. I think a lot. And Jason Morrow, who the hell knows what's up with him? He's a little bit banged up, and he continues to underwhelm here. Let's see. Move on to Buffalo. Not too much, because we recorded the podcast last Friday after they played on Thursday, so no real changes there. New England, I give up. I literally give up trying to understand what they're doing and get the information, because they're just not out there. But Julian Edelman is a little bit banged up, and they bring in Reggie Wayne. Any thoughts on Reggie Wayne? I don't think it's a great sign for Brandon LaFell, but as much as I love Wayne, boy, I wonder aloud if Reggie Wayne's done, Greg. I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts on Wayne in New England.
You know, I think at this point in his career, it may be a team he kind of fits, because it's all that quick, short stuff. I mean, that's probably what he can do at this point. And he may not be able to do that. We don't know yet. But that's, I think, what he can do. Last year was evident that he just really was losing, you know, any not that he was ever truly explosive, but I mean, you know, he's at the back end. So, you know, can he be a guy who in that kind of offense catches 8-yard passes? Maybe, you know, I guess time will tell on that.
AFC North, the other, Baltimore Ravens.
Well, just one quick point. The other interesting thing, and I don't know what they're going to do when the season starts, because they're trying to figure out Bill Belichick. You know, no one can do that. But as I'm sure you're aware, Devin McCourty played corner last week.
Yeah, well, they're very thin here at that position, Greg. They're
yep.
They're working a lot of younger guys here. You lose Revis and all that, and Browner. That's certainly a tough situation there. And he'll get them playing well probably by midseason, but they may be a matchup that we're looking at in terms of starting our wide receivers against New England Patriots. Moving on to the AFC North here, Baltimore Ravens, Lorenzo Taliaferro banged up. He's going to be down for a week or two maybe here with a knee injury. Buck Allen, I think we've talked about him, but what do you see from Buck Allen in terms of running it inside? And I know you like him as a receiver out of the backfield.
Yeah, and I know for a fact that he's had a very good camp. So, you know, I think they feel comfortable with him. So if he has to get some snaps and carries, I think they're totally fine with that. And I, you know, as I said, and I may have said this to you, when he came out of USC, for those who liked, and I would say I liked him more than I didn't, there were elements in the way he runs of a Matt Forte. He's that kind of, you know, sort of fluid runner. He doesn't necessarily look explosive, but has a little better quickness than you think.
Yeah, and worth noting that now he is playing for Mark Trestman. Cincinnati Bengals, they just had a bad day. I don't know if you saw the tape there, but Tyler Eifert does look like a major mismatch kind of a guy here, especially down the seam. Of course, Andy Dalton can't hang him out to dry and throw too high so he gets jacked up. Did you see that play? I thought that was potentially an explosive play there for Eifert.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, this gets, you know, back to Dalton, of course. You know, I mean, they have weapons. How that plays out in their offense will ultimately become a function of Andy Dalton, and we've discussed him, you know, ad nauseum. So, I mean, you're dealing with a quarterback that, you know, at times makes outstanding decisions and good throws, and too many times for a fifth-year quarterback makes bad decisions and the resulting bad throws that go with it.
Great talent in terms of A.J. Green and Eifert. You've got Marvin Jones and Sanu. But if you're running the Bengals, you're Hugh Jackson, do you just make Jeremy Hill the foundation of your offense?
Well, they are. They will do that. But the quarterbacks, you know, like we like to say, John, and you say it sarcastically, it will be 3rd and 9. So, I mean, of course they're going to run the ball. They know that, but it's still going to be 3rd and 9. And then Andy Dalton, that's where your quarterback has to make good decisions, good throws, you know, do all those things that quarterbacks have to do in those situations.
How concerned should we be in Cleveland about everything? The Browns, Johnny Football dealing with that elbow issue. How concerned should we be based on what you've seen from Josh McCown? It's not exactly looking promising.
Yeah,
it's the worst.
I'd be a little concerned, John. I'd be a little concerned because the reality is, since his 6-game stretch in Chicago, Josh McCown has not really played good football. And
No.
You know, that's the reality. I mean, the film, you know, I've watched every snap of Josh McCown, you know, last year in Tampa, this year in the preseason. He's not really playing really, you know, good football. The kind of football you want a veteran quarterback to play, you know, where you're asking him not to make mistakes. You're asking him to control the game, the tempo, manage it. That's the kind of team where, hey, if it's 3rd and 6 and it's not there, an incomplete pass is a good play. You punt to your defense. You know, that's he hasn't really done that effectively. So there's a concern there for sure.
I hate to say it, but they got to get Dwayne Bowe back. I know he's back. He's a big-bodied guy, just a short possession type of move the chains kind of a guy can help them out a little bit with along with Hartline. They don't really have a tight end of note, and I just hope that we're all not raising our hopes too high on Duke Johnson. I mean, he's just a rookie. He's not going to be the savior for the Cleveland Browns. In Pittsburgh, the Pouncey injury is a problem. They do bring in Ligurski. How considerable is this, the loss of Pouncey, for Le'Veon Bell in this offense?
Well, the only thing I'll say is they've faced this before. And I think they're the kind of team that's very stable and has a great sense of continuity in their approach. So I don't think that they're a team that views it as, oh, my God, we lost Pouncey, we can't play. Now, he's a really good player, so there is a downgrade, but they've dealt with it before, and I think that, in all honesty, and I don't want this to come across wrong because Pouncey's a really good player, I don't think this derails their offense, John.
Yeah, no question about it. Moving on here to the AFC South. We don't have too much here on the Texans, but Chris Polk, if you watch Hard Knocks, is looking pretty darn good here. Can Chris Polk, you view him as someone who can be kind of the a replacement type for Arian Foster? Is that possible?
You know, I think they'll be. It'll be running back by committee, in all honesty. I mean, I don't think – I could be wrong, but I don't think they have a back on their roster that they're going to be able to give the ball to 22 times a game, and they're going to want to run the ball. So I think you're going to have running back by committee. Maybe somebody has a hot hand in a given game, and that week he carries 20 times. But I don't think there's going to be one guy who carries the load. That's just the way I see it.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. Moving on here for Houston. Not too much otherwise here. I think we'll have to kind of wait and see when the season starts, how everything goes. Do they get the tight ends more involved? I am seeing a little bit of action with Garrett Graham here in the preseason, which is a little bit more of an upgrade from last year. Indianapolis Colts, again, not a ton going on here. We did see a little bit.
Not
of
showing
Gore.
Much, John. Not showing much. I mean, Frank Gore is it's like a lot of veteran running backs. They don't play much in the preseason.
Yeah, I do think that they're going to throw it down the field a lot, though, obviously. You bring in,
we know that.
Portion. I mean, I'm loving that, Greg, for Frank Gore. I mean, I love Gore this year. Light boxes, checkdowns from Luck, moving the ball, goal line work. It's all there for Gore if he can stay healthy all year. In Jacksonville, I'm hearing good things about Denard Robinson. Your thoughts on him?
Good.
Yeah, he's improved. I'm told that they're really pleased with his vision and just his instincts as a runner. You seen that on tape thus far?
I think he's looked pretty quick. He won't be the bell cow, so to speak. It'll be Yeldon when he gets back. But, I thought that the thing that stood out to me watching the tape in 2 weeks is I think their O-line has improved. And they've now named Wisniewski the starter at center in a battle with the Bowenko kids. So, Jokel, to me, the keys are the tackles, Luke Jokel and Jeremy Parnell. And if they can play relatively effectively, I think it could be a pretty solid unit, which will help in all areas.
Tennessee, I think maybe we're starting in the fantasy world to warm up to Marcus Mariota. It's only preseason, but Greg, based on what you've seen here, could you have envisioned a month ago the first couple of games for Mariota going as well as they have gone?
Well, I don't know what I expected, to be honest, because he was one of those guys because of the offense he came at. I didn't know, but he's been really good through 2 weeks. And I think there's certain things I know I look for, maybe different from others, but the one thing, no matter what you look for, that you have to say about Mariota, he's been very poised. He's been very composed. This past week, he did a lot of things before the snap of the ball with checks and audibles, which I love the fact that the Titans coaching staff is giving him the ability to do that in the preseason to see how he can handle it. And it looked like he handled it very well. So, I with the evidence we have at hand, Marcus Mariota has done a very good job through two preseason games.
They made some O-line switches this past week. Patasi,
yep.
The rookie, they got him in there.
Looked really good. He'll be the starting right tackle.
How about Sankey? How did he look? Because you could argue that was his best showing as a Titan.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that had to do with the O-line. Sankey is a straight-line downhill guy because that's what he played in college with the spread, and there were holes. So you saw some burst because what Sankey is not is a tough physical inside runner, and if the holes are not defined in there, he doesn't look very good because that's not what he is. So in this week he had holes at the point of attack, and he burst through them, and he definitely looked a whole lot quicker than he's ever looked before.
Greg, I apologize here. I've been a little distracted the last 10 minutes. I'm getting ready to do a radio hit with Jenny McCarthy. How about that, Greg? I'm a little distracted.
You are a rock star, John. You are an absolute rock. I'm just basking in your aura today.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, I'm a little concerned because I think she just tweeted that I was going on in a minute, which I didn't think I was going on in a minute. But anyway, AFC West, Denver.
You don't want to keep Jenny McCarthy waiting, John. Believe me, I understand if you need to ditch me for Jenny McCarthy. It's okay.
Yeah. No,
she looks a lot better than I do.
She does, considerably. You know what? Let me talk to Melvin Gordon. I mean, I know it's preseason, but I feel like with Melvin Gordon, if he doesn't show much in this game, we're going to have to proceed heading into week one without seeing anything from Melvin Gordon. What are you looking for from Gordon this week?
I had a great talk with my good buddy Merrill Hodge, you know, this couple of days ago, because we kind of felt the same way about Gordon coming out. You know, Merrill made the point that what he does when he watches college backs is he looks at all their runs from 0 to 5 yards, because that's the way you judge an NFL back. And he thought that Gordon was a guy that was a little tentative. And we saw that, you know, early, and not that the sample size is large, but it was a continuation of the way he's run probably his whole college career, and he even admitted it. So he needs reps in the NFL. He needs carries.
Oakland Raiders, what did you think? It was only one throw. We've covered the Raiders a lot here, but I was encouraged by Derek Carr's downfield pass to Amari Cooper this past weekend. It was a nice ball.
It was a great ball. It was a great ball. And, you know, Cooper ran right by Terrence Newman on a stutter go. I mean, and Newman's a veteran corner. You know what I always love about Carr is he's such an easy thrower. The ball, you know, there's no effort when he throws the ball, even when he throws it downfield. By the way, there was a free agent wide receiver for Oakland who flashed to me. And, again, I don't know their receiver situation. There's a kid named Seth Roberts. You familiar with that name?
No, honestly. Well, I'm not.
All right.
Yeah,
well, again,
here on the
hey,
chart.
For all I know,
West
he could be cut
out
in the first. Yeah, for all I know, he could be cut the first cut too. I'm just saying, watching the tape, I thought he flashed. He's got good size. I think he's like 6'2", 195. He showed some deceptive speed and run after catch ability. All I'm saying is he stood out on tape to me. I have no idea how he's done on a day to day basis in camp, but he stood out on tape.
Okay. Well, we'll check it out. It's Cooper, it's Crabtree. Tompkins, you would think, will make the team for sure. Andre Holmes, a little bit banged up. He's going to make Butler's.
Well, we don't know. Yeah, Andre Holmes is a question. It's a new coaching staff, and he's injured. So, you know, it's not like he's Jerry Rice. I mean, I think Andre Holmes is one of those guys that has to perform.
Yeah, yeah, there's no question. Let's look around at Kansas City. Not a ton going on here, but they're clearly going to throw it down the field more. Greg, where's your confidence
level
this year that Alex Smith can actually do it?
They're trying, John. They're trying hard.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
They're
calling those plays. They want the ball down the field. That's clearly been a focus in preseason.
Yeah, if they have some success, what are the residual effects here? I would think that'll help a guy like Jamaal Charles if you got those safeties creeping back.
Well, I'm not sure. It's not going to be a downfield passing offense. When you say they're trying, or I said they're trying, they're going to try it on shot plays. So, you know, they're going to try in situations where formationally personnel that it looks like run and the defense would probably be an 8 in the box anyway. They're not all of a sudden going to be a let's just toss it all over the yard and throw it down the field offense. So I'm not sure if there's any residual effects on anything else. It just means they're going to try some more shot plays to hit some, you know, explosive chunk plays, which they hit very, very few of last year.
And finally, Denver, what are you seeing out of the offense this summer here? It's not going unbelievably well. Although, was that last week? Peyton was, I think, wasn't Peyton in the shotgun like every single play last week, or was that the week before?
No, he was under center.
We know he's going to be under center more. Okay.
He was, he was under center. It was a really vanilla, conservative game plan, which didn't surprise me. I thought Manning looked the same, throwing the ball, nothing different. They had four new players in on their O-line, and obviously Evan Mathis now gets there. You know, Manning didn't get hit in the game, so I don't think they showed a lot. We'll see what they do this week. You know, I assume Manning will play a half, so we'll see. This will be a week where I think you'll see more, but I don't think you'll see a whole lot more either.
Greg, Jenny McCarthy is calling, so I need to
Well, John,
wrap
please,
up the
please go ahead and please say hello for me. You know, we go way back.
Yeah, I had a name drop there. So we're going to teach her a little bit about fantasy football. But we appreciate it. We'll be back next week. We appreciate the efforts. Enjoy watching the tape for week 3 of the preseason. For Greg Cosell, I'm John Hansen. We will talk to you next week.